Congressman Crenshaw, thanks for coming on. Welcome.
Hey, thanks for having me. Hope you're doing well.
Doing very well. Okay, so you were there was a great article in the Daily Wire recently because you have pretty much had it with the lockdowns across the country from COVID-19. Your position has been that maybe initially it was the right thing to do, but now we're moving into an area where we're doing more harm than good.
Yeah, that about sums it up. The goalposts got moved, and the new thinking about this isn't really based on logic or data or any kind of science at all.
You said that we mentally manipulated ourselves into an abundance of fear. I love that comment.
Yeah, I mean, it's true. It's, and I'm pointing out that we've never reacted this way worldwide. This isn't just America. This is worldwide. We've never reacted this way to a risk that where we run from it to such an extraordinary degree. And it just seems strange in hindsight. And, you know, I think we were told that the virus was much more deadly than it was, and we didn't know any better. I think that's an understandable mistake to make. And it is a contagious virus, that still remains true. But you know, like many risks that we live with in our daily life, I mean, this is something that we've actually come to realize that we can live with. And in places that are open, you really are seeing people who, it's not as if they're uneducated on the risk. They know what the risk is, but they're out and about, and they'll take precautions as necessary. You know, I pointed out that I went to the gym yesterday, and the guidelines that my gym has set forth are very common sense. Okay, use every other machine. They put up some more barriers in between weight sets. They ask that you wear a mask unless you're, you know, but people who aren't wearing masks are usually off in a corner doing their own thing. So it's very common sense, and it flies in the face of the non-common sense sort of laws, or I would say quote unquote laws, that have been put out throughout the country by local officials and state officials that really just don't know what they're doing and don't know how to engage in critical thinking and don't know how to really think about, okay, what makes sense, what doesn't, and what will people actually follow and what they want.
I think it's interesting you bring up that it's a global reaction, and I've been kind of putting some thought into this, and I feel like social media is a big part of this. And the fuel, as you know, of social media is essentially tribalism. That's the fuel of social media. And so do you think maybe that's how this got so partisan and so crazy? I mean, like, for instance, in the Houston area, the judge, Lena Hidalgo, says she's going to extend the lockdown order until June 10th, even though the governor is completely going to override her. And the police are like, we're not enforcing this. We're not fining anybody for this. It's like this weird cognitive dissonance. And the only reason to even do that is really just to be partisan, to be tribal in our manner. Do you think social media feeds that?
A lot of things feed that. I just got the news about our county judge here as well, and it's just unbelievable. In her case, it's very confusing. There's no reason to do what she's doing. She knows the governor will override it, and just for all your listeners out there, you don't have to listen to what she's saying. The governor's orders are the actual law. That has the force of law. Hers do not. And this betrays a real sense of immaturity on her part. You know, let's not forget that she has zero experience for this job at all. And that has really been shown to be the case throughout a crisis. And that's unfortunate. She has good advisors, but I don't know what on earth she's hearing that she should continue lockdowns. It's complete nonsense.
Right.
So that's that. But why is it happening on a deeper level? Is it really just partisanship? To an extent, it is. To an extent, it is. You have to, you know, the partisans believe that they have to stake their ground in the opposite of what their opponent says. Now, that's not really rational, but it is what they do. I think it's more psychological than that. I wrote an op-ed in the Wall Street Journal this week on this. Democrats tend to view liberty very differently. They tend to think that you're free if you have services, if you have things. If we're giving you things, it helps you be free. We conservatives don't think that way. We think actual freedom is freedom, personal responsibility, and the ability to fail and to thrive. That's freedom. Okay, so we're much more comfortable with that. It's also demonstrated in a lot of surveys based on what kind of occupations conservatives and liberals take, that conservatives are clearly much more able to confront and overcome actual physical risk. Okay, and you know, in studies too, our brains light up differently when confronted with a risk-taking game. Now, liberal psychologists have misinterpreted that data for years and said, well, fear drives conservatism. That's what they always think. Of course, that's not really true. It's a much more nuanced discussion than that. But it's very clear that conservatives are more willing to engage in the freedom and personal responsibility to confront risk. The last thing is, you know, the left tends to think in only in compassionate terms, and that's why they'll repeat the words, you know, if it saves one life. If it saves one life, then it's worth any cost. Like, they'll say this thing, and this is not a rational statement, not even a little bit. And again, they don't think about this way for all these other risks for some reason, but for this one they do. It's because for them they overemphasize only one sense of moral foundations, whereas conservatives are much more broad in their thinking. We emphasize a lot of different ones. And again, this is all backed by research. You should read that op-ed if you're listening. And so that causes them to overemphasize one thing to the detriment of a lot of other things, like the cost of society, the cost of people's livelihoods, and also the cost to simple rationality. You know, our case numbers don't justify further lockdowns. Our hospitals have been empty for a long time. That single metric right there should have told us a long time ago that we were overextending the lockdowns. But these people don't listen to reason.
Well, they've changed the reason for the lockdown. You know, the initial reason was exactly what you just said, that we don't have an overrunning of it. And now, you know, they're pushing it out to, well, wait until we have a vaccine and so on and so forth. And to your point about, you know, the thought processes behind how we attack these things, it's interesting that you're absolutely right. Conservatives have a tendency to say, I just want personal responsibility. And I don't think conservatives are not taking this virus seriously. I don't think you're not taking this virus seriously. I think it's just a matter of, let me handle this on my own, because I can use logic. The government can tell me what are some basic recommendations, and I will follow those of my own free will. I don't have to have somebody breathing down my neck, shaming me if I choose not to wear a mask in an open space.
Right. And just, you know, again, I understand we didn't have the knowledge before, but now we do. And now we're in a case where we're opening. But, you know, if you look at the absolute numbers now versus even a couple months ago, we have more now. It's just that we're more comfortable with the virus. That's the reality. So the lesson that we should actually learn from the future is that just don't be scared.
Right.
Don't be so scared. You need to think more rationally, because we are literally opening up in a situation that you could argue is worse than even a month or two ago.
Right.
Just by the numbers.
Right.
Okay. And yet it doesn't seem worse.
Right.
Because it isn't worse. Like, that's the reality. Because it's not that bad. Well, it's not that it's not worse. It's just not that bad, and it never was.
Right.
Okay. Our hospitals were never at risk of being overrun. And you're right. They moved the goalposts in order to justify their nonsense and to a logic where basically, okay, don't leave your house until literally everything is safe, like all the time.
Yeah.
You're like, okay, guys, now we know you're being ridiculous. Like, let's get back to it.
What's your reaction to Elon Musk saying he might move out of California because of the constant lockdowns and maybe park his butt in Texas?
Wish he would do that. Wish he would do that sooner than later. I think that'd be pretty cool if we had Elon as our neighbor and a great mind like that. We could use... I think he'd be well at home in Texas.
You've got a new book out, Fortitude. I think it dovetails nicely into a point about not being an abundance of fear. The idea is that, you know, and I totally agree with this. Essentially, I don't think my generation, I'm 44, I don't think my generation's ever had to do anything really hard. And so when we look at this situation, it's like we're freaking out. We want the government to do it for us. Whereas my grandparents, you know, they lived through World War II and the Great Depression.
Exactly. We've lost perspective. In my book, I talk about perspective a lot. And, you know, you can build mental resilience by simply observing some basic truths, which is that you have it really easy. You do. And even if you're going through legitimately hard times, I promise you somebody else has had it harder, and they did a better job overcoming it than you did. That's a really hard truth for people to hear, but it's always true, 100% of the time, even if you get blown up and you're blind. Somebody else had it worse, and they smiled more. Like, so that's kind of a hard-hitting realism, okay, about perspective. And then as a society, we've totally lost that perspective, and we've become more fragile as a result. Like you said, your generation's never really done anything hard. You know, you could argue that the very, very few of us participated in recent wars, but I would argue that these wars compared to past wars were not nearly as hard. We're much better taken care of, despite all the complaining that you see. We're very well taken care of. And so, yeah, that's true. And I think people are always naturally looking for something to kind of rally against. There's always a search for meaning in somebody's life. And if things get too easy, they start to lose that meaning. And this is a element of outrage culture where they attribute a lot more emotion and meaning to small menial things than they really should. And I think that's a part of the outrage culture that gets created. And my book is fundamentally about outrage culture, but more importantly, how to overcome it.
Right.
And looking into things, peeling the onion back, just redoing your research and with having the self-awareness to recognize when you're being overly emotional about something and irrational is an element of mental fortitude. Somebody who reacts emotionally is a font of mental weakness. And it's important that we start speaking in those terms, because we will fail as a society, ultimately, if nobody is personally responsible, if everybody thinks they're a victim, and everybody is fragile.
Yeah, agree. All right, before I let you go, any reaction to Nancy Pelosi's $3 trillion stimulus bill plan?
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't serious. It was always a joke from her. It was 3 weeks of making the American people wait. We could have solved a few things in between. You know, we could have solved the unemployment benefits issues. We could have tweaked some things with PPP. We could have looked at specific parts of the economy that might need help, like the restaurant business. She didn't want to do any of that. She wanted to convince the American people that, well, oh, it's too scary to go into Congress. Because actually, before they voted on that $3 trillion bill, they voted for proxy remote voting, okay, because they're too scared. They think that they should be able to telework. They think they should be able to work from home. Meanwhile, they want to order takeout and go to the grocery store, and they want those people there to stock the shelves, of course.
Right.
They want that, but they want to telework. So, it's a clown show.
Yeah.
Clown show. And that $3 trillion package wasn't serious at all. It's, we've already spent trillions of dollars, and it's, and by the way, call your Texas representatives who voted for it. Call them and ask them why they voted to send Texas money to New York and California, because that's exactly what that would do, because it was bailing out states that mismanaged their finances. So you really need to ask your representatives these questions.
That's a really good point. Representative Dan Crenshaw, thanks for your time this morning.
No, thank you.